This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mack, Sherat Abdullah and Julian Ng. It is Wednesday, the 28th of August, 6 o'clock in the morning. And guys, can you imagine we're this much closer to the end of August already? Before
what?
We know it, it'll be September and we will be 9 months into the year.
Before we know it, we'll be old.
Oh,
like me.
Before Julia. We know it, it'll be 2020.
What a buskill of it. But before that, let's focus on something that is more short term. I mean, Madeka's
around the corner, yeah.
That's right. That's fun, right? I mean, have you guys been to the parade before?
Yeah. No, I have never.
No, Julian, you have to, man.
I've been to a parade, but only when I was like 10 years old.
Yeah.
Not since then. Yeah.
I used to be able to watch it on TV.
When you wake up early.
Wake up early, but now that's Netflix, you know.
Oh, I was going to say that I don't wake up anytime before 8. Before 11.
Not on a holiday, right?
What time does the parade actually start? I don't actually remember anymore. I haven't tuned in clearly since I was 10 years old.
Right. I don't know. I can't remember, but I remember I had to be at Putrajaya at about 6:30 or 7 o'clock or something.
To do what?
To watch the parade.
Oh, really?
Live.
Parade. Wow.
Yeah. And you'd be surprised. There are like tons of people
waving flags
and everything.
It is quite exciting to actually be there because, you know, you've got the atmosphere, everyone's cheering, and you get to watch the parade in person and see all the fancy maneuvers. It's really quite cool.
Yeah, never had the opportunity to actually be part of the parade, though. I mean, I was in military school, never been called to sort of like march in.
You
don't have to be part of the military school.
Agencies get invited.
Yeah.
Right.
So you can be a school kid and get invited too.
Yeah, so I always thought that there was an appeal being in military school and they want to see you march and everything, but apparently that didn't happen.
Well, you could volunteer for next year's parade.
Like, yeah, why not?
I'll come and watch you.
Okay, and I'll throw in the whole BFM.
Yeah, we should start a petition. Get Sherat Abdullah into the Merdeka
Just
parade.
Just you, though. Don't involve the rest of us.
All right, in the meantime, though, we do have lots of things lined up for you this morning. What are we going to be talking about, Sherat?
Okay, so, well, Olympic is happening next year, 2020, and it's going to be held in Japan. I don't know about you guys and what you guys look forward to when it comes to Olympic. I've always liked the 400 meter and so forth, and Usain Bolt is just crazy. But Japan, they're a tech nation, and they're impressive. They're quite impressive on that in that front. And they want to showcase basically that, their tech and their robots. So would you be interested to see them?
Okay. And the other thing is that we know that there is a huge Malaysian diaspora working overseas, you know, residing or working overseas. And apparently some of them who have come back to the country to work here are not too happy. So we'll find out why.
All right. And we're also going to be talking about one of the most difficult things, at least in my book, in daily life, which is how to say no to people gracefully. If you want to weigh in on those conversations, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are coming up on a song right now, though. Here is Give a Little Bit by Supertramp, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Tommy, Can You Hear Me by The Who. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Sherat and Julian. Now, saying no to things is generally one of the things that I struggle with the most, right? Because when someone invites you somewhere, you kind of, maybe you don't really feel like going and you think, I don't really want to disappoint them, or, oh, I don't have a good excuse to say no. So you just say yes anyway and maybe feel a little bit miserable because you just wanted to stay home, for example.
Yeah.
This is something that has been covered in a website called Well and Good, and it's basically giving you tips on to the fastest ways to gracefully get out of things you don't want to do. So it gives advice like things like maybe be gracious without accepting the invitation. So say, Julian, if you say, let's go out for coffee, and I'm not really feeling it, I say that sounds like a fantastic time, but I don't think I'll be able to make it.
It sounds like sugar coating.
I guess it kind of is, you know, but notice there's no reason given. like I don't make some flimsy excuse like, oh, you know, I don't think I'll be able to go because I have to go and do this and, you know, go and run an errand for this and I'm really busy. And so you just say, no, I'm not going to be able to make it. No excuse needed.
Yeah, I see the virtue of doing that. Because I think one of the biggest problems about having to say no is to accompany that with a little bit of a white lie, right? Because we're usually forced to justify why we can't disappoint the other person. Mm-hmm. And then that leads us to lying, which is not a good thing, all right? I mean, you should just be honest and upfront. Or else not give a reason, because you don't always have to justify why you are declining something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even if you don't lie, right? I mean, there are certain, you can be honest with regards to this, but what happens, I think what this article is saying is that when you come out with excuses, sometimes it could backfire in the sense that people would listen to your excuse and then try and come out with a response, a reaction.
Yeah.
And trying to get you out of the excuse that you've given. So no is just an absolute and abrupt no sort of throws them off a bit. It's like, and if you were to continue saying that, eventually they'll get the message.
So if you don't really like somebody, or really not like a serious hate of this person, but you just find this person boring, right? What would you say if they invited you out for coffee? You can't go like, no, I don't want to go because I think you're boring. Right? You gotta, how would you get out of
tough
that
one
situation?
So my default is to kind of end the conversation, right? So I will say, no, I don't think I can make it, but you guys have fun.
Okay.
Right?
All right,
because
that's a good way.
Because there's no excuse that the other person will try and get you out of. Mm. There's no justification that continues the conversation. It's just, when I say, but you guys have fun, the other person says, oh, okay, thanks. And then that's it.
Okay.
So that kind of gets me out of it without having to go into too much detail. Yeah. So that's my general tack.
That's a good way.
I mean, I've gotten all right. So I don't think I have a problem saying no. I think I've pretty much been quite a no
blunt
guy, especially after work. I mean, it's just been no. And I think where I want to improve is to be able to say a bit more yes, because it's getting a bit boring, to be honest, at least on my part. And I know there's a lot of exciting things going on out there. It's just me obliging to my laziness and my fatigue, whereas I think my body can actually do a bit more further than it could go a bit more further than that.
Yeah, I think there's a fine line to be drawn, right? Because sometimes, especially if you're an introverted person, you generally, the idea of hanging out with a group of people doesn't necessarily appeal that much. But sometimes when you actually push yourself and get out there, you have fun.
Exactly.
Right?
So you don't regret, right?
Mm-hmm, so it's actually pushing yourself past that initial reluctance.
I think there was a movie with Jim Carrey in it.
Yes, man.
Yeah, that was a good movie. He couldn't say
very awkward
no.
When I watched it. He couldn't say no.
And then there was another one with Ricky Gervais, I think, who couldn't lie, who always had to tell the truth.
Jim Carrey
right?
couldn't lie as well, and I think Liar Liar is
really?
The movie. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Liar Liar, when he's a lawyer.
So while I'm not sure whether they were great movies or not, but the ideas were very good, right? Like if you always had to say yes, what kind of life would you have?
Absolutely, because maybe you would wind up bungee jumping off a cliff like Jim Carrey did, I think, in that movie, right?
So are we questioning now the whole need to be grateful to say no and going for yes instead?
It could be. Do let us know what you think, though, because you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a couple of messages coming up for you, and then we'll be continuing our discussions with some of the most exciting things out of the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
To Aida, KFC Bakar Bersama with fried waffle sticks dipped in chocolate sauce is
sedap hingga menjilat jari.
Ha! To Lee, it's
好到手手指.
Yummy! To Prem, it's
别人说话真用手来.
Different but same. It's finger licking good. KFC Bakar Bersama with fried waffle sticks. It's everybody's bucket.
Next, passport please. And where are you off to, sir?
Back home to Malaysia.
Malaysia! Are you not dropping by Singapore? They have that, what's it called? That chicken rice.
Restaurant. That's actually ours.
Oh, right. And Crazy Rich Asians. I love that movie.
That was actually shot in Malaysia with Malaysian people starring Malaysian food.
Oh, you know what? Speaking of delicious, that actor, what's his name? He said the best satay was in Singapore.
Yeah! He would know. You know why? Because he's, what do you want to call it? Malaysian.
Okay, sir, I'm going to tell you. If you feel this strongly, maybe you should, I don't know, do something about it.
It's time to put the kuah on that nasi and the bilis back in the sambal. Do your part and make Malaysia great again. Channel that keyboard warrior in you and be the change you wish to see. Sign the petition at bersatuformakan.my. That's bersatuformakan.my.
Bemused football managers. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. That was Wide Eyes by Local Natives, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Shariz Abdullah and Julian Ng. Now, the 2020 Olympics are just around the corner, and Toyota is the worldwide mobility partner of the Olympic and Paralympic Games and has been for the last 5 years. So far, that's kind of been pretty much limited to providing a couple of cars at PR events. But most recently, ahead of the 2020 Games, they've actually released a whole slew of new models. Mm. And not all of them are cars. In fact, some of them are actually humanoid robots. And for me, this is fascinating. And if there was ever any reason to go to Tokyo for the 2020 Olympics, it would be to see these robots in person.
Well, I don't know why people go to Olympics in the first place. I mean, for me, it's always been about number one is the sports. And after that, you want to see what the country has to offer, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the culture. So for me, Japan has always been, I guess, the city, the people, and also some of the historical stuff like the samurai and stuff. I'd like to see some swords flinging around.
Go to the Kabuki theatres.
I think Japan is an amazing country to visit for tourism, but To do that during the Olympics would be madness because there would be so many people there. The hotel rates would be just hiked up 10 times over. I don't know if I'm too... I want to go through that trouble, you know, but just to go there to see the robot, I mean, my dismal self is really telling me that this is a peek into a dystopic future where robots will rule the world.
I knew you were going to go there, Julian. I knew you were going to bring in some kind of Skynet Terminator situation.
I'm not averse to having a robot in my house or, you know, a self-driving car. I would love the comforts of new technology and so on. Mm-hmm. But think of it, right? This is a glimpse into the future.
And, it absolutely is. And I think it's quite exciting. So even just putting aside the robots, right, there are a number of electric passenger vehicles that are going to be debuted at Tokyo. Mm. And most of them are accessible for wheelchair users. Mm. Some of them are autonomous or some are just monitored by human drivers. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this is adapted to use in the wider population once the actual Tokyo 2020 Games are over. Mm. And they're also, not forgetting, they're also demoing, I think, a fully electric car, if I'm not mistaken, and that's going to lead the torch procession at the games. So it is quite exciting to see what kind of new developments are going to come up. For me, the robots are definitely a big part of that, though, because there's the mascot robots, and then there are some that will be performing functions that you would otherwise see like a ball boy in tennis do, right? So fetching javelins off the field, for example, or even transmitting video recordings from other remote locations between a closed network of these humanoid sort of machines, so that other people can actually watch things happening at the remote locations from wherever it is they're sitting.
I was just going to say that we know that Japan is going through some slowdown as well as having a tiff with South Korea on trade spat.
I wonder if it's ever eventually going to hit a point where there are more robots than people in Japan.
Well, I mean, that's the dismal future that I was highlighting. But, you know, this trade spat and also in the wider context, the geopolitical concerns that we have right now, you know, this is a chance actually for Japan to use this to showcase their innovation, their technological innovation, and possibly an agent for growth in the future.
Encouraging migration, perhaps.
I don't know because they've been struggling with the economy for a very long time, but they are a very culturally isolated country. They don't like foreigners to live there, right? They don't mind the tourist dollars, but you know, it's very hard to assimilate into Japanese culture, right? So this could be something that would promote growth in Japan because it showcases what Japan can do with some of its technological products.
I mean, tie that down in what you mentioned about accessibility. A lot of it are about all the transportation. I mean, they are the front runners with regards to creating technologies for the aging population in Japan.
They are
facing a huge problem. Like you said, they could be taken over by robots. And I think the trend... didn't sound right. But anyway, but the trend of aging population as well, it's happening around the world. And like I think rightfully, Julian, this is their way of really showcasing all those technologies that's going to be used later on.
Sure. I think it was Francis Fukuyama that highlighted that a lot of developing countries are going through what he called the demographic trap, which is that they're facing the dual problem of aging populations and declining populations. I think Malaysia itself is also facing an aging population problem because as populations become more educated, especially the women, they work longer, they get married later, so they have fewer children. And eventually, we are going to have to move to a more accessible society. And perhaps you're right, Sharit. Japan could be the front runner for these kinds of innovations. But do let us know what you think. Are you excited for robots at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now, though, we are coming up on the 6:30 news. And to take you there, here is the Cardigans with Rise and Shine, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Can't Stand Losing You by The Police, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharit Abdullah and Julian Ng. Now, there has been a study conducted by Hayes Asia that showed that Malaysians who studied and worked overseas may not necessarily want to come back to the country. And this is the 2019 Hayes Asia Overseas Returnee Report that says that actually a majority of those Malaysians who have come back from overseas did have trouble finding satisfactory jobs. And for quite a number of them, the reason for coming back to Malaysia wasn't that they saw employment opportunities, but rather that they came back because of family obligations. And I guess this doesn't really bode well for the brain drain that we always talk about.
Yeah, that's right. I think that, the brain drain is a very big problem, but the other problem is also the fact that we won't be able to match the pay of these people who are working overseas, because the Malaysian economy is much smaller compared to a lot of the global centres in which a lot of Malaysians go and work. So that would be a great matter of dissatisfaction. And in fact, I used to work in Hong Kong and Singapore, and I took the decision to come back because of family and friends, right? That's a different matter altogether. It's not money related. I wanted to be back home. But it takes some adjustment, to get used to the fact that the spending power is a lot less, actually.
So, I mean, it seems like there is a need to set your expectation. And, I mean, even the country as well, when they are, asking for all these talents to come back home, as if that when you want to come back home, you have to come back with the intention of sort of providing, having the national interest at heart. It seems like you're doing a public service. Because there'd be a lot of sacrifices in some ways, especially ringgit being low now, and again the ability to pay, whether or not they can match with the salaries that all these developed countries are offering them before. But I mean, I still think that Malaysia, for some of them, they could see some good in Malaysia. For example, what sort of quality of life that they could offer. We're talking about the quality of healthcare and so forth. I mean, we do have an education as well, private education, some of the considerably relatively cheap in comparison to some of the, what has been offered in the region.
Yeah, we do have a world-class healthcare system and very, very cheap and very accessible compared to other countries. But I guess the problem is whenever, you see reports on the brain drain and saying, our young people are all finding jobs overseas, there does seem, I've always felt that it had this overtone of, why are these people so selfish, not coming back to help serve the national interest. But to a certain extent, I don't think that's fair. Because at the end of the day, national interest isn't going to help you support a family, isn't going to feed you. or pay for your medical bills, or pay for the medical bills of your parents. Mm. You know, there is a good quality of life that you can find here in Malaysia, and we love our Malaysian food and we love our Malaysian culture, but I can definitely see the attraction of going overseas, because even if, say, cost of living is high in London or New York, you are still earning in US dollars or in UK or in pound sterling, and that is, at the end of the day, a much bigger draw than the food that you can get here in Malaysia.
Yeah, I think that a lot of us are becoming global citizens, right? We are going overseas to fulfill our aspirations of what we define as a kind of self-actualization. It's not necessarily confined to our home base, Malaysia, although we love the country. And so I think it's so much more important for our government and our country and everybody who's in charge of policy making, even us, right, in the media, to really look at every single cent and every single resource that the country has to make all these qualitative factors more interesting and more higher quality, not only for foreigners or for the diaspora of Malaysians, but for local Malaysians, right?
How
we commute to work, how we interact with each other. You know, we got to make this place, it's not always about the money, but if we can make this a better place through better policy, then all the more better.
And this is not an easy job, right? It's much easier for us to talk about it in studios than it is to actually implement this and translate this into an actually better public transport system, for example. But I feel like it's important just to start that conversation and just to show that these things are beginning to happen, because most Malaysians are sentimental, right? And as long as you have hope that you will be able to find a job, that you will be able to earn enough to have a comfortable life, then I don't really think that a lot of these people will be leaving the country for work. Because if you take a look at the study, only 30% of their respondents saw that there was a viable opportunity to develop a career here in Malaysia. 30%.
Yeah.
You know, more than 60% only came back because of familial obligations. And much like you, Julian, because I spent a year overseas, and I was one of the few in my class that only spent a year because I wanted to come back because of my family, because of my friends.
Yeah.
A good number of my friends stayed and continued and found work in the UK or in the US because they didn't see the opportunity for them here in their home countries, despite how much they might miss their families. So at the end of the day, I think if there is hope, I do believe that Malaysians will come back. But we need to see that hope start to translate into actual material change.
So I think there's so much a government could do. I mean, we are in the right sort of path. I mean, after what we've all done last year.
No, I totally disagree with that.
There was a lot of call, Julian, in the sense that they wanted to change the government.
It starts with policy.
It starts with policy. But and now we have an opportunity where a government is starting to listen in comparison to what we used to have before. And I'm thinking whether or not we're running out of... It could be eventually running out of excuses, all on individuals, whether or not is this just to serve your own individual aspiration, or whether or not, hey, that
I
we'll
mean,
talk about
if
one
you
thing.
Look at the budget, right? 80% to operations, which goes to funding the government. That, in a nutshell, reflects your priorities.
Yeah.
So there is very little money going to development. I'm sure there's a debate that will continue, right?
Sure.
Wouldn't end here.
Absolutely. And do let us know what you think about this. What can we do to lure our overseas graduates back to the country? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Here is a few messages for you, though, and then after that, we'll be taking a look at what's been said in the newspapers this morning. So be sure to keep it here. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Suede. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Sharit and Julian. Now, thank you very much for your messages this morning. We've had quite a number of WhatsApps. Yup says on our first topic of how to say no gracefully and honestly. He says, happy morning. Interesting topic for me. I've been taught to be honest from when I was young. So being truthful and replying honestly, like saying no if I don't want to join a group, seems to work for me. Maybe I'll get less invitations next time, but so what? Others who value your presence will continue inviting you. And I think that is true. That's a very true point of view, yep, because at the end of the day, your true friends won't push you if even if you're not feeling up to hanging out on that particular day, right?
I know. So, I mean, that was my point earlier when, and then you start missing out and you realize, you know, that when that sort of impression has been put out there and people don't invite you anymore or what is to be made of your life, really. We also got WhatsApp from Uncle Lim. This is with regards to our conversation on Malaysian coming back to work. And the main reason for staying overseas is the job opportunities on one hand, and the other is the local politics, government, racial and religious bigotry to be controlled and eventually stopped. Until then, the brain drain will increase. And I think I have to agree with that. It's, the whole talk about race and everything, that's really taking too much of our headlines.
Yep. There was a voice message that came in, very rare, because we don't have the time to listen to a voice message. But I guess the gist of what this person is saying is that it all boils down to money, right?
Mm-hmm.
You are attracted. That's the carrot that would attract you to move anywhere, unfortunately. And Malaysia falls short, I think. So that's why I think we have to be so... I don't know what the word is, we have to be so precise about how we spend our resources. And a lot of it, I feel, if we can't pay people the right amount of incomes in the short term, right, hopefully in the long term that situation would improve. But then we should spend on other things like transportation, like trees, schools, education, a walk in the park, that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now we're destroying our parks to build condominiums, right? That doesn't improve anything. And just to do a simple thing like growing trees around the neighborhood requires money.
So, I mean, I definitely don't disagree with that. But the question is, if the money even were to be spent in that direction, right, would that then translate to more money in the pockets for citizens?
And we're not even there, because we are not having those discussions in the government. We are discussing about other things that don't improve the quality of life of Malaysians.
Indeed we are. Now, thank you very much for your messages this morning on WhatsApp as well as on Twitter. But let's also take a look at what's been said in the newspapers, because taking a look at the front page of The Star, it says, the stage is set, and this is in regards to the National Day procession. It's got a nice, lovely picture of an archway with Wawasan 2020, and it's very optimistic. And this is something that I think is echoed in on pages 4 and 5. So they've got diverse ways to show love for the country, the king to flag off the unity walk. I thought some of the interesting things out of The Star this morning was that Kulim Airport is set to have two runways. So that's been apparently leaked to The Star. It says a sale of in 18 square kilometres of land around the proposed site will be made to pay for the cost of the airport.
So that is something to look out for, I guess. especially Kulim. I don't know whether or not there's a business case to have.
Airport, Kulim,
right?
Kulim is the up and coming place that's quite close to Penang. It's got a huge township over there, and I think it's.
But what will attract it? Or what will attract planes to Kulim rather than to Bayan Lepas, for example?
I think that if I'm not mistaken, there is a huge township that's developing in Kulim, and it's also going to be the other industrialized center apart from Penang, you know, just to take the pressure off Penang.
Right,
a little
so
bit.
It's a spillover.
Yeah, it's a little bit
because
crowded.
It's overflowing. Yeah. And I think for New Straits Time, I think it's following the same theme as The Star as well. They're touching a lot on nationalism and also in regards to Merdeka coming up on Saturday. So covering stories on our patriots, I would say, people who have served in the police back then. And there's also stories in page 4 with regards to Gojek road safety. Basically, the engagement has started now that we are talking about what are the list of things that constitute safe riding for, you know, if we were to ever introduce e-bike hailing.
Mm-hmm. Bike hailing, indeed. But also taking a look at the Star Biz. So here's a funny thing, right? When we pick up the Star Biz paper pullout this morning, I honestly thought that I dropped a page or two on the floor somewhere, because it's only actually 5 pages thick. But the front page of it is...
That's not good for the economy.
Well, if you look at it, each Financial Daily, on the other hand, it's thicker than that.
A little bit, yeah, marginally. Yeah. So the Starbiz says Penang Tunnel job to kick off soon, and this is the very controversial Penang Tunnel project that's worth 6.3 billion ringgit. So that is apparently set to start construction by end of October this year. So that's going to be an exciting new development to that story.
All right, in PNB as well, there's going to be a change of guard. Abdul Halim Rahman is going to leave from PNB to Sime Darby, which is, of course, a PNB stable. The other a Singaporean is going to take over PNB, and his name is Jalil Rashid.
Interesting. Now, that is all we have for you from the papers, though, this morning. So here to take you into the news is Modest Mouse with Float On, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.